life. And this comes after days and days of massacring whole families in the Jabalia refugee camp as part of the larger strategy to block off, to starve, to essentially complete the ethnic cleansing of northern Gaza, where 400,000 people are. This is being called a genocide within a genocide. People are posting their final goodbyes. So we are filled with horror beyond words and are attempting just to embody just an ounce of that refusal in our actions. And of course, what's so important for all of us here in the U.S. to understand is that this is being done with U.S. bombs. Those bombs that are massacring family after family in this war of extermination. Because make no mistake, that is the goal, extermination. It is being done with U.S. bombs, with U.S. weapons, and with U.S. cover, with shielding Israel from accountability at any international institution. Now, the Biden administration wants you to believe that the reason the U.S. is arming and funding and covering the Israeli government like this is for the sake of Jewish safety, right? This is the moral cover that they use. This is the justification used to cloak the entire enterprise. And so we are there to say we reject this myth, this sick myth, with every fiber of our beings. We refuse to let our histories, our identities, our traditions be used to torture, to starve, to massacre, to erase Palestinians. And we are there to say the true interests of the Biden administration, the true interests of the U.S. government are this, its own imperial interests and its own financial interests. And so we are there to say to the U.S., stop arming Israel, stop profiting from genocide.
And Elena, could you talk about why you chose the stock exchange? Because the reality is that every war that the United States has ever fought, some people have made money off of, some sector of American capitalism. And in this case, could you talk about the arms makers and the huge, obscene amounts of money they are making from this war, companies like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin?
That's exactly right. So most know that every year, the U.S. sends $3.8 billion in military funding to Israel. Now, first thing to know is that this is an unprecedented amount of money. There is no amount of public taxpayer money going annually to any other country like this. The next thing to know is that none of that money is used. When we hear the word aid, we might think, oh, that's for recovery from a natural disaster or for housing or education. No, all of this money has to be used on the Israeli military for military purposes. And not only that, but all that money has to be used then back in the United States on U.S. defense contractors, on U.S. weapons corporations. So we see here that the entire enterprise has the goal of propping up the U.S.'s war economy. Now, $3.8 billion is just the amount of money typically going in taxpayer public funding. It is nothing to say of the billions going in private funding. But this year, the U.S. sent in public funding, the U.S. government sent $18 billion in taxpayer funds to the Israeli military. There are no words to describe how unprecedented this is. And so when we say that it's all in the service of propping up the U.S.'s war economy, it works. This year, the stock prices of weapons manufacturers were skyrocketing. Last year, if you were to invest $10,000 in Raytheon, right now, you would have $18,000 in just 1 year. That's an 80% return in 1 year. Raytheon is the firm making the bunker buster bombs that are prohibited from use in civilian areas that Israel is currently using right now in southern Lebanon. Now, not only that, over 50, at least, members of Congress and their spouses are invested in Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, two of the leading weapons manufacturers. So we can see they are quite literally profiting from this genocide. And these are the people who are voting on increased funding and arms to the Israeli military. Our elected officials should never be able to profit off of genocide. They are there to carry out, supposedly, the will of the people. And you think about this. Just last week, Hurricane Helene ravaged communities across Appalachia, right? Killing hundreds of people, displacing thousands. This is just 1 week before Hurricane Milton did the same, ravaged Florida. And before the wreckage could even be accounted for, after Hurricane Helene, FEMA reported a $9 billion shortfall. At the exact same time, President Biden announced that he'd be releasing another $8.7 billion in military funding to the Israeli military. This is almost the exact same amount of money. So what we are seeing is that quite literally, the United States government is choosing to massacre in mass Palestinians over supporting our communities here in the United States who are trying to recover from this devastating climate crisis, as well as the chronic disinvestment from their communities. And so that's why we were there with 500 people yesterday to say outside of Wall Street, this epicenter of global capital. And yes, as you said, Juan, you know, Wall Street has been profiting off of genocide, every genocide of this country since the founding of this country, since the founding genocides. Wall Street was actually built as the first marketplace of to trade enslaved people kidnapped from the shores of Africa in 17 and then traded in 1711 on Wall Street by the European settlers who'd also carried out the genocide against the indigenous people of Manhattan. And we were there yesterday on Indigenous Peoples Day, and so that's part of why this history is so important to root in. And we pay homage to the many movements that have been protesting Wall Street ever since, from ACT UP, that actually had its founding protest on Wall Street in 1987, delaying the bell. And actually, one of the organizers of that demonstration was with us yesterday in jail, which is so meaningful, to Occupy Wall Street, to many Palestinian-led demonstrations at Wall Street this year. And so that is why we were there, to say altogether, fund FEMA, not genocide, fund housing, not genocide, fund healthcare, not genocide.
I want to turn to Samaya Awad of Adala Justice Project. She's a Palestinian who participated in the protest you were arrested at the New York Stock Exchange. She's speaking here to CBS News.
We refuse for our government to continue doing this, using our tax dollars while our country is suffering from climate disaster, from lack of health care.
I also want to turn to 82-year-old Ross Pachetsky, a MacArthur Fellow, former anti-Vietnam War activist, current member of Jewish Voice for Peace. On Monday, she was one of the oldest people to chain herself to the Wall Street gates. She told CBS why she participated in the protest.
A lot of our resources are going to war. Jews have a long tradition of opposing war.
Ross Pachetsky is a professor emeritus at Hunter. As we hear those voices, Elena, you yourself are the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor. Talk about that, how that informs your activism today, as the back of your T-shirt that says Stop Arming Israel on the front says Not in Our Name.
The day that my grandmother's entire family and village was massacred in a different genocide, the Holocaust, my grandmother just happened to be absent. I grew up knowing this fact and understanding that it means that, first of all, I'm not supposed to be here. My life is a fluke. And I also grew up agonizing over the question of, where were the neighbors? Why did they just stand by? Why didn't they hurl their bodies between the killers and my family? And so today, it's with all of my Jewish ancestors at my back, the one who survived, my grandmother, and all those who didn't, that I and all of them together say loudly, more profoundly than ever before, We refuse to be neighbors who just stand by. And I think so many of us in these demonstrations, especially as we watch the Israeli government cynically use the excuse, use the conflation of Judaism and Zionism. Let's be clear, Judaism is our rich thousands-year-old tradition. Israel is a 76-year-old apartheid state. The cover has been pulled off Israel. People can see it for what it is, and for the Zionist project and the project of ethnic cleansing and genocide and the full expansionist goals that it has, and it will use any means it can to make that project a reality. And the only excuse they have left, the only cover they have left, is to call any resistance to it anti-Semitism. We refuse this. There is nothing anti-Semitic about fighting for people's right to live on their land, to thrive, to be safe at home. We refuse to let our traditions, our identities, our histories be used to allow for the torture, the mass torture, the mass starvation, the massacre and the erasure of Palestinians.
The protest on Monday was the latest in a long string of nonviolent protests led by Jewish Voice for Peace at Grand Central Terminal during rush hour, at the Statue of Liberty, at the Manhattan Bridge. Do you feel the Biden administration is hearing your voice?
Oh, may it be so. Listen, the Biden administration is watching all of us. They have watched the needle move. I mean, the polls are showing that 2/3 of Americans now want an arms embargo. 2/3 of Americans are saying that they don't want arms to go to Israel. This is astonishing. And let's understand it for what it is, which is an extraordinary win by the Palestinian-led movement for Palestinian liberation. And, of course, we see the Biden administration not listening. We see Congress not listening. All of us are asking, why is this? Well, first of all, it's because we don't live in a democracy. They don't have to listen to us. It is for their own imperial and financial interests. It is for their own interest in controlling the region, which have been broken open and uncovered in so many of the interviews you've done here on Democracy Now! And it's for their financial interests and financial gain, because we know of the corporate control of this country. And so we see this moment of, I mean, to be quite honest, we see a lot of despair and a lot of hopelessness right now, especially as Israel expands its war of extermination deeper into Gaza and then throughout Lebanon and, you know, bombing Lebanon and Syria and Yemen and the West Bank and the risk, the threat to soon be bombing Iran at the same time, to watch them not just listen but to expand it at the same time is truly extraordinary. And to feel so many millions more terrorized as they're watching their loved ones in these other countries now fleeing for their lives as well. And we refuse to give up. Right? We take inspiration from all of the movements that came before us that never gave up after 1 year of not winning. We take inspiration especially from the Palestinian struggle that has been here fighting for 76 years and has never thrown in the towel because it is such an uphill battle. And all of us here in the belly of the beast, where we know is in control of these arms and these funding, we must do the exact same. We cannot give up. We must double down right now. And even if the path to that arms embargo is getting increasingly muddled as we see them refuse to listen to us, we know that what all of us must be doing is applying this pressure from every angle possible, and that every single one of us has a role to play.
Elena Stein, I want to thank you for being with us. She is the Jewish Voice for Peace Director of Organizing Strategy, a descendant of a Holocaust survivor. A Monday morning, she was arrested along with about two other Jewish activists and allies in one of the largest acts of 200 Jewish activists and allies, one of the largest acts of civil disobedience the New York Stock Exchange has seen, demanding the U.S. stop arming Israel. When we come back, Union, it's the name of a new film. We'll speak to the co-director and organizer, a documentary about the historic campaign of Amazon workers to unionize their warehouse in Staten Island, New York. Back in 30 seconds.
And I love the way you laugh maniacally at me in the middle of the night for no reason. And the way you smell like polystyrene drying out on a tranquil summer's evening. Can't get enough of your dulcet tones, your terrible jokes, your love of kayaking. And the way you couldn't care less that everything I say is painfully obvious and incredibly boring. Because you're the kind of girl who could spend an interesting evening with a grain of salt. And the fact you declined so many marriage proposals, when that gets me pretty hot. In the beginning was the word, and you've been down since day one. Alexa, set the alarm for 3 a.m. and turn the heating all the way up. Alexa, order a copy of the Cool Greenhouse's new record.
Alexa, by the Cool Greenhouse. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court set to consider a labor case with major implications for the right of workers to organize. YAP USA Automotive Systems has asked the Supreme Court to block a National Labor Relations Board case that alleges the company illegally interfered with the union election at a Michigan plant. The company is challenging the case in part by claiming the NLRB's structure is unconstitutional. More than 20 other companies, including Amazon, one of the most powerful companies on earth, have filed similar lawsuits challenging the National Labor Relations Board's power. Now a new film documents how Amazon workers at Amazon's JFK 8 Fulfillment Center on Staten Island made history by voting to form the first Amazon union in U.S. history in 2022. The same year, Amazon spent more than $14 million to quash union drives by the company's workers. An NLRB investigation later found Amazon illegally prohibited them from distributing pro-union materials. The documentary is called Union. This is its trailer.
We got to continue to fight because this company has not been held accountable.
Is Chris Smalls, he was fired when he went outside and protested.
You make Amazon $638 million a day. It's time we get paid our fair share.
Cancel all your plans unless it's family related.
They ain't family related, we have to change. Like, we got to.
There's nothing that can stop our momentum. The only thing that's going to stop us is if we stop ourselves.
Right now, Amazon is on their high horse, and we want to punch them in the face.
We should just go in, occupy that training room, and don't even let them hold the meetings.
Can we talk outside?
Hey, you know that's illegal, right? You're not supposed to be doing that.
I'm about to give up.
This is the long haul, right? This is the marathon.
This is our shot to make things better.
The demands of workers at Amazon's JFK 8 Staten Island warehouse included better pay, benefits, and working conditions. In this clip from the film Union, an Amazon union organizer interrupts a mandatory anti-union meeting the company organized.
We're asking you to do three simple things. Get the facts, ask questions, and vote no to the union.
The ultimate theme. Remember, your signature is worth something, so protect your signature.
Hi, my name is Natalie. I'm a sort inductor on the ship dock, and I'm actually one of the organizers for the Amazon Labor Union. Just to let you know, the leader of the ALU is Chris Smalls. He was fired last April when he went outside and protested because we were not getting PPE inside the factory, even though we were processing it for the rest of the world. Okay, so him and his friends that also worked here got fired. Okay, so when I say that we put a union out there that is worker-led and is Amazon employees. We have all of you in mind. It's workers protecting workers and standing up for workers. No, and you guys, no. I want to say one more thing. You talk about $1,200. Union busters make $2,000 to $3,000 per day paid by Amazon to sell everybody out.
A clip from the new documentary Union, which opens theatrically in New York this Friday at IFC Center. It's directed by the acclaimed filmmakers Brett Story and Steve Meng. Meng joins us now along with Connor Spence, who's in the film, now president of the Amazon Labor Union, IBT Local 1, a member of the Teamsters earlier this year, the ALU affiliated with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters to become ALU-IBT. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! So, Steve, talk about the significance of this film dropping or opening now.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having us. We're huge fans of you and Juan. You know, this is a film that updates a narrative about labor organizing that many have been talking about. You know, we saw a resurgence in labor organizing after almost 50 years of decline in union density. And this was a group of workers in Staten Island, New York, who got together and decided that enough was enough, right? These were workers that have often been called the invisible working class. And that was because they've been largely long been voiceless and disempowered from pushing back and were in many ways considered by traditional unions unorganizable. This was a trillion-dollar company that they took on, and in an incredible feat of organizing and determination, were able to win in a near landslide against Amazon in April of 2022.
And Steve, given that your film centers on labor rights and so many of the streaming platforms these days are controlled by corporations with their own embattled labor histories, like Apple, for instance, or Amazon. Well, what was the response of the distribution platforms, and what did you have to do to get the film out?
Well, you know, we had the great honor of premiering the film at Sundance, actually receiving an award there. You know, we were one documentary among 15,000 that applied to get into that festival. And despite that, we've also had the distinct honor of experiencing what a lot of doc makers have been experiencing in this industry, which is, you know, in an attempt to distribute a film that falls into the genre of political cinema, you know, we're dealing with a very corporatized, myopic industry that does not necessarily value narratives like this as much. And so we, much like the Amazon Labor Union, have been charting a more independent course to distribute the film on our own. And it's in many ways been a more gratifying and exciting process.
I wanted to go to another clip. In this scene from Union, three Amazon union organizers, including Chris Smalls, who would become the first ALU president, are handcuffed, detained by New York police for being on Amazon warehouse property.
Hey, Chris. Like I said, man, I'm going to ask you, and anyone who's not an Amazon employee has to leave the premise, please. Anyone who is an Amazon employee, I am not speaking to you. You guys are free to stay.
Okay, but are we in a parking lot that says visitor, right?
You are currently trespassing on Amazon property if you are not an Amazon associate. So
right,
anyone
here well, I, not you didn't answer the question, associate. Though. That sign over there says visitor, right? I'm a visitor.
With who? What are you doing here?
I'm visiting with him. They work here.
How long have you been here for, sir?
A few minutes.
So you're refusing to leave?
No, I said I'm going to leave when he leaves.
Are you refusing to leave?
I said, no, I'm going to leave when he leaves.
Are you leaving us though?
Yeah, I said, yeah. Right. If you're not leaving within the next 2 minutes, you're going to be arrested.
You have 2 minutes.
You're not enforcing no law. Yeah, you're just wasting your time.
You have 30 seconds or you're getting arrested. 30 seconds.
I'm going to get arrested? How am I going to get arrested? For what? For what? You want to arrest me for what?
If you do that,
hey, look, man.
Right now you're obstructing police business right now.
No, you're not. Get up out of here.
No.
What's up? He's a worker. He works here.
Hold on.
Stop.
Stop.
Get your hands off of him.
So Chris Smalls, who had become the president, first president of American Labor Union, was arrested there. He had already been fired as an Amazon worker for protesting the lack of COVID protocols. We're joined by Connor Spence, who is the second president of the American Labor Union. You also were fired of the Amazon Labor Union. You also were fired. You were there at that moment.
Yeah.
Talk about how Amazon cracked down on all of you. You still remain today, this Staten Island warehouse, the only unionized warehouse, Amazon unionized warehouse in the country.
Yeah, I mean, we are probably the most surveilled workforce anywhere.
1.5 million workers.
Yeah, and when you're in the warehouse, everything's tracked. Every movement you make, the time you're away from your station, and Amazon can really weaponize that against you once you start to unionize. They can find ways to fire you. They found a way to fire Chris when he was protesting the lack of safety protocols during the pandemic. They found a way to fire me for a policy that the NLRB now considers to be illegal and ordered them to rescind nationally. They have a lot of ways that they can retaliate against organizers, and both Chris and I have, unfortunately, had the police called on us by Amazon, been arrested, never goes anywhere, but it is an intimidation tactic they use. It's a way they try to control the workforce and waste your time and prevent you from being able to organize and talk to people.
Yeah, Connor, I wanted to follow up on that. This because given the fact that Amazon has so many employees and they are usually in these huge fulfillment centers, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 workers in a place, why it's been so difficult for the organized labor to make any inroads other than in your fulfillment center, your warehouse in terms of unionizing Amazon?
Yeah, I would say, like, by design, basically, it's built to be difficult to organize. The turnover in an Amazon warehouse, on average, is 150%. So our campus on Staten Island alone churns through about, you know, there's 10,000 workers. They'll churn through about 15,000 New Yorkers every year. And that's by design. That's not an accident. The average worker stays about 8 months before they quit. They're fired by a computer or they injure themselves. So already going in, like, that's a difficult task to organize. There's a scene in the documentary where the first time that we had filed for an NLRB election, we needed to sign up 30% of the active employees of the workforce in order to have a sufficient showing of interest to get the NLRB to come do a union election at our warehouse. But by the time we submitted those cards, I think over 1,000 of them were for employees that had been fired or quit since. So already it's a huge task for any union to take on. As far as what made us successful, I would say, you know, a lot of it was endurance. We had a model of organizing that was very much worker to worker. We were inside the warehouse, building relationships with people, creating that sense of community. We started as an independent union, so we were basically a blank slate. There wasn't much Amazon could do to union bust or try to third party and separate people from the union, which is a common tactic that these corporations often try to do. They try to third party the union, make workers feel as though it's something that they're not a part of, they're not responsible for. And so I think a lot of things kind of aligned in our case that we were able to be victorious when it's clearly really a struggle to organize and unionize these warehouses.
We just have 10 seconds. Why did you decide to affiliate with Teamsters?
It's national organizing is too much for an independent union to do by ourselves. And if we want to have a chance of taking Amazon to the table, creating that pressure, there has to be national organizing.
I want to thank you both for being with us. The film opens this week.
This Wednesday at IFC Center in New York City and then across the country.
Steve Meng is co-director of Union. Connor Spence is president of the Amazon Labor Union, IBT Local 1. Again, happy birthday to Juan Gonzalez. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
Come join us for Slumber Party, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
You'll hear female artists, oversharing, and research on health, psychology, and identity.
Hope to see you there.
Well, Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.